the one thing I think that people do at majors, they overprepare and they burn themselves out. And that's where this, I mean, nutrition is so important. You make sure you eat the right things at the right time.
This is The Tournament Code.
We appreciate you taking the time to join us today, Johan. I know you personally. We know some about your background. Before we get talking about all that and what you do, caddying, et cetera, I thought it would be more fun. We'll be due at the beginning of every episode as we have a sponsor who helps keep the lights on, which is PubView Books. And we have an opening tee shot, is what we call it, which is a quiz or a trivia question. And so Jack has prepared one for all of us. Me, Cooper, and you will take a gander at it. You'll be the one who goes first. So, Jack, hit us with this question. What is it?
South African players have combined to win how many majors? And a two-parter, how many players have won a major from South Africa?
I'm going to go with eight. And so, no, wait, I take that back. Holy moly, it goes back a long way. Okay, I'm going to guess 10 and five players.
I'm going to guess 10 as well. I think we have Gary Player, Ernie Els, Louis Oosthuizen,
Bobby Locke.
And Bobby Locke. Those are the only four I can think of.
And not one more.
I think Gary Player won five, and Ernie Els maybe won two.
Won three.
He won three, okay. Bobby Locke probably won two, and Louis won one.
So we're going to 11 now. Dang it.
11 and four?
Charles won one, Louis won one.
Oh, Charles.
Charles Russell won the Masters.
So that's 12 and 5.
Yeah, I think 12 is the answer.
We'll lock in at 12 with 5.
Guys, South Africans have won 25 majors. Gary Player has 9.
Best thing underestimating South Africans.
Has 9?
Gary Player has 9. Ernie Els and Bobby Locke both have 4. You guys forgot Retief Goosen has 2 U.S. Opens.
Obviously.
Ernie Els won 4 majors.
Yeah. He won the Adam Scott British Open like 10 years ago. And then Trevor Immelman won a Masters in 2008. And then Charles also has a Masters. So
yeah, I'm gonna throw a question at you guys. You guys are the experts. Uh-huh. What putter did Retief Goosen use in those US Opens? You only use one putter. And it's quite iconic putter, I would say.
I'm gonna guess a 2-ball.
No.
It's not the Odyssey 2-ball?
No. Remember now, that was the US Open where Phil four-putted and the greens were ridiculous, was one of them. The other one I might be wrong, that the one at, where was it, Oklahoma, when he missed it's a short putt on one in the playoff?
Blade, I think it's some sort of blade, correct?
No.
Yeah.
It is, I mean, yes would be a yes answer, but... Come on, guys. I just gave you guys a clue.
Oh, is it just like a $100 yes putter?
No, it's the Tracy yes. That one of the little half moon.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
You remember those?
I haven't seen one of those in front. They used to have them over at PGA Tour Superstore, and that's the only place I'd see them.
Dude, I love those putters, but I putted off the toe, so I always miss my putt left. No good.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. You mentioned that you putted some. You also played golf some. Right now, tell us a little bit about what you're doing currently, what your gig is.
Well, right at the moment, I'm busy fixing my floorboards in my house. And I'm trying to get grass growing around the house. No, I'm joking. So I just moved in July from – I worked for Christian Bezuidenhout for 4 years, which was incredible. We had a great run. And then I got offered a deal I couldn't say no to. So I went to live. I work for Brandon Grace now. It's been unbelievable. I mean, it's incredible how good these guys are. But yeah, enjoyed it. And the team, everybody in the team I've grown up with, I know most of the guys on the team is the reason why I'm caddying. So lots of fun.
That is cool. What was the transition like? You mentioned that all the players are good. From a caddy perspective, one, working for the player, what's the transition been like? And two, as far as just working on the course, as far as charting out courses, etc., what has been the difference given that you're going to new stops, whereas, you know, with Christian for the most part you're going to similar places over the past 4 years. Now you're at all new stops.
I mean, look, the transition is a lot different, but the Lyft product is, I think, is getting scrutinized unfairly because it's still a great product. The fact that we use lasers, probably, like, as far as a caddying perspective, the PGA Tour, I think you probably worked a little harder because you don't have a laser, first of all. And yes, you go to the courses every time, but I mean, I'm a guy who works really hard. So I would go out there and roll balls in every pin position. Like, as far as PGA Tour, it was easy because we knew where the pin positions would be. Now with the, and you would have historical data that you could use every round, which helps a lot. That's a lot with the preparation for the for each round. And then as far as live, I mean, you gotta, it's kind of, you can get complacent quite easy, I would say. So you need to really stay on top of your craft, which, I mean, we all want to do this and make money and then retire. So I guess you just need to make yourself work hard and just keep doing the same thing. And preparation is exactly the same. It's still a golf tournament. It's just obviously now it's three rounds, so you don't be, it's harder to guess the pin positions correctly because it's only three rounds. But yeah, it's still exactly the same, I would say.
What's the team environment been like for you, being able to work with the people that you've known for a long time?
I mean, we grew up in South Africa as junior golf. We would have team events pretty much every tournament playing as a junior. We like in South Africa, if you have a junior tournament, most of the events would be inter, we called interprovincial tournaments, which would be basically like states like Georgia against Tennessee, against like five states that will play against each other. So the team aspect was very appealing to South African golfers because that's why we grew up. So yeah, I mean, it's nice to be around people that you know, you all like get a little bit of a team spirit going, especially like because we all are big rugby fans. So we will be just encouraging each other. And then obviously, if you have a success, it's amazing because then you celebrate it together as well.
You've been caddying since 2013, I think. Tell us about how you got out to caddying, because I mean, there's caddies all over the place, but it's hard to get eventually up to the PGA Tour. Tell us about how you got to that point.
I mean, it's actually a pretty interesting story. You kind of already in the introduction, like I was the same as you guys, tried to play, came to play college golf. I kind of knew in my junior year that I wasn't good enough. I got hurt my shoulder. I was good when I was younger, but I also didn't have the like practice, like I could say, hunger for practice to get better. So I decided, I was like, man, I'm going to focus on my studies. So I studied on my, I just focused on the studies. Went to a few PGA Tour events. One of my close friends from my hometown, he caddies for Louis Oosthuizen. So I went out and I saw him, and I became friendly with Louis, Charles, and I know Brandon Grace very well. We played the one I work for now. We played juniors together. So then I met all their caddies, and I was like, man, this looks nice. I mean, I don't have to sit behind the office. I can do what I want in off weeks. And I was like, oh, let's try this. So then they said to me, oh, you just got to get lucky to find someone. So then I went to a couple of tournaments in South Africa. First week, I caddied for one of the guys that played in our college, not in my college team, but at the same college. He was professional already, and he played SA Open. So I went and caddied for him. His name's Andrew Giorgio. So I caddied for him that week, and then didn't have a bag for the next week. I mean, I just came out of college. I have no money. I was like, man, I don't know what to do. I'm going to go home and try to find a job because we missed a cut. And he says, no, man, just come with me. I'll pay for the fuel and I'll get you accommodation. We'll figure it out. I was like, sweet, let's go. So then in the grocery store, I met a South African guy that I know that Monday. I was like, man, I'm here. If you don't have a caddy, let me know. I can caddy for you. So he said, yeah, come caddy for me. So I caddied for him. We actually missed that cut. And then the next tournament I caddied for him was a week, 2 weeks later, was Mandela, and we won. It was on the world, you know, European tour back then, now DP World Tour. So that kind of started off, and then the rest is history. We just kept going because it was quite nice to have a bank balance that was a little bit more than zero, and we just kept on rolling. It was a lot of fun.
When it came to making the transition, like getting used to caddying, going from a player, what was it like trying to help, like you not being the focal point of attention, especially because, you know, players are all different. But one thing that can be true about a lot of players, especially the higher level you get, is the more internally focused they get, which means, you know, they like things a certain way and you're more of a service provider than the focus point. What was the adjustment like becoming that service provider as opposed to being the focal point.
For me, it was quite easy. I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but for me, it was quite easy because growing up, my parents raised me as a Christian family, so I was a servant. So I always tried to serve people. And as far as like helping people, I didn't even help people. I just gave advice. But I mean, I like I said, I mean, I enjoy helping people in general, not just golfers. Whoever I can, I try to help. So I mean, on the golf course, if for me it was quite easy being I was a pretty good player, then I can actually give my opinion about certain things where other people probably, I mean, I don't want to say can't give as good advice, but I probably just have more experience with each situation. So I mean, it was I didn't I look I really enjoy what I do, and I love being able to give someone advice and to see that actually work out. It's probably the most thrilling thing you can have in the industry. So I've been fortunate to have it work out most times. Not always though, as most of my players can tell you if you have them on here.
What are some of your best memories of being caddy? Like maybe if you have a story of a certain time, you helped out your player in a clutch situation or made a key decision coming down the stretch for the final round. Do you have anything that comes to mind?
There's plenty of them, but like, I mean, this can actually be like, whoever, if there's any caddies that are listening to this, that could actually take this to heart, is that the fact that if you just put in the hours on the golf course, like people think you walk the golf, you go work on the golf course Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that's it. That is not it. Like Thursday morning, if you have afternoon tea time, you go out there, you watch other people play the golf course. Back when I started, we didn't have the thing called live data. Now you have live data, which helps actually gives it to you anyways, which will probably lead to later on in this podcast, we can talk about that. But I mean, my first is probably the most vivid story I'll ever remember was actually for this guy Davi that I caddied for. My third event ever that I caddied was that tournament we won. It was called the Nelson Mandela Invitational or Nelson Mandela Championship. Actually, it was the last time they hosted. That was actually the year he passed away in South Africa. It was fine, but it was bad weather the whole week. So the final round was only three rounds. We knew it was only three rounds. The final round that morning, we teed off at like 12. I got up at 6. I mean, that's my third tournament. I'm full of energy. I just want to do this thing correctly. So when I stood on this one hole, it was a shortened par five because of the tee boxes being so wet. So I knew you're most likely going to have an eagle putt here. So I stood on this hole for probably, I would say, hour and a half, and I watched five, six groups come past. And I see this one putt, the guys keep missing this putt high. It doesn't break, it's just a dead straight putt. So I stood there, and I mean, as you have it, I mean, it's obviously the luck of the draw. We hit it exact same spot. So I stood there and I was like, Davi, don't even read this putt. This is straight. I stood here this morning. This is straight. He looked at me. He says, are you smoking your socks? This thing has to come from the right. I'm like, no, dude, it's straight. And he just hit it straight, went straight in there, and we won by two shots in the end. That was, I think, hole 13 on that final round. I mean, ever since that day, I mean, it's just been like, if you put in the extra work, you never know where you can help a guy one shot that's going to make you win a tournament. So yeah, that's my most vivid memories with Christian. There's so many of them. I'm the guy is so good, and we worked so good together. So it's so hard to pinpoint one.
You're obviously really good at scouting a golf course. So, like going about a practice round, what's the most important thing you look at like kind of trying to approach a golf hole or a golf course in general of just scouting it to make a game plan?
So I mean, before like actually now we can get into the stats. Like before we get to a tournament, normally I use a stats guy for myself. So I would have had the historical data of where each pin would be. So I'll put cups down and then I'll just look at where's good misses. I look at the data where good misses is. So sometimes I'll be like, man, that looks like it's dead. Because I'll see the data says there's 70% up and down. So then in a practice round, I'll take my player and I'll just throw a few balls in. So just hit a few shots from me and let's see what it looks like. And he'd be like, yes, this is quite easy actually. So then you're like, okay, well, the data is correct. So now we know that is a good spot if you're in trouble. So like, I mean, from walking the golf course perspective, you just look at where, if they're in the middle of the fairway and they're playing well, there's not much we can do. Like you know where the easiest putt is on the green because it's just knowledgeable if you walk on the green. But if they're in trouble, then that's where I like really look at the golf course, be like, okay, if I'm here, where's a good spot to leave it if I can get it up by the green? Otherwise, we leave it up by 80 yards and we just up and down from there. So yeah, that's probably scouting the golf course. I mean, we just look at more trouble. So it's kind of a negative mindset, I guess, as a caddy, just to look at the trouble. But once he gets in trouble, I don't want to guess where there's the next play. I want to know that is the spot where we're going. And if he hits it there, it better be in a good spot, because I don't want to tell my player, hit it there, and then I get it there, and then it's dead. And he'll be like, why did you just say to me? He said, it's good there. I'm like, yeah, I thought so too, but it's not. So, yeah, I hate guessing on the golf course. That's what, probably why I spend so much hours on the golf course. So I can never give an answer to my player that's a total guess. It needs to be 100% accurate.
How is the data with the Live Tour? Is it evolving and getting better as you guys get more seasons? Like, is there bigger data sets? And, like, I don't know if it's ShotLink or what kind of data are they working with out there?
There's not much data right now on Live Tour. So most of the time when you play a course where the PGA Tour has played, that's where you'll get your data from. But I'm sure as it goes on, they will give us data. I mean, there are people now starting to scout the golf courses, but it's not really data. Because I use the guy, I just know him as Horsey. He's an English guy on the PGA Tour. He works for Billy Horschel mostly, but he's got quite a lot of guys. And he's fantastic. Like in the mornings, if you're in the afternoon, obviously with Liv, it's different because we all play at the same time. But on the PGA Tour, if you're in the afternoon and then in the morning, there's a field playing in the morning, before you tee off, you have data that tells you where every birdie came from for that hole, where the actual ball was on the green, or where the actual par came from if they missed the green. So you have each specific player's data, not just a summary of whatever the data is. So the data game is so big right now. I mean, cheaper. There's golfers out there that's not using data. They are so far behind the eight ball, and even caddies. I mean, it's worth the investment. You have to put in money to make money. So that's, I mean, I wish, I really hope that the Live Tour, like, we'll get more data, because it does help a lot. But obviously, well, that now it comes back to the caddy again doing the right work to help his player. So I guess it's a win-win situation for most people there.
So based on all of that information that you take in and advise the player with, are you telling him actually where to aim on the green, or are you just giving him the number where the wind is coming from, how far it's playing, etc.?
That is very specific on the player. So it depends on what they want. Like, for instance, for Christian, I mean, I can relate to Christian and Brandon now, because it's the most recent. Of Christian relied quite a lot on what I said. So he would have asked me where the best spot is. So I would normally have my book and I'll have the pin position. I'll make a little circle where the easiest spots are. So he'll look in my book now and again, or even Brandon will do as well. But Brandon's a bit more aggressive. He'll probably attack more pins. But there'll be a situation where the club is maybe just in between a club. Then he'll be like, hey, where do you want to hit this? Or he'll be like, okay, just a little bit right of it, and I'll be yes. Or if I say, for instance, we have a wedge and it's still in between and he says 5 yards right, I'm like, man, this is a good number for you. Just go straight at it, because he's just a bit more aggressive. So it's all relevant to the player. The player will give you the feeling, and as far as it means the same as when you're married, you get to know your wife. You know, if she makes a certain gesture, that she's probably a little uncomfortable right now, or then you'll be like, okay, well, let's veer a little bit right of the pin or a little left of the pin. If you know, like, man, he's on, just go straight at it. Just miss the pin, don't hit the pin, because then it goes off the green.
Absolutely. When you talked about data differences between the tours that you've been on, tell us about the data when you were on the PGA Tour, what data you're using there and how you're using it.
I mean, it's like I said, I was with Callaway, well, Christian's with Callaway, and through him, I got to be contracted with Callaway as well. So they did a phenomenal job by giving us data as a build-up to a golf course. So they'll analyze the previous year's things, like previous year's data on for each hole location, which side of the fairway is better to miss on that hole location. So you look at that as preparation for practice rounds, because then we can talk about different clubs. Like, for instance, if the pin is in the back, people will tend to hit 3-wood instead of driver, so they can have a fuller shot in where they can control the spin, depending on the golf course, if the greens are soft. And then, like, certain pins, you want to be on that side of the fairway. So, but then I used another guy, like I said, Horsey. He's an English guy that lives in America, but works with quite a few players. But his live data to me was incredible. Because, like, if you play in the afternoon, you know exactly where the birdies are coming from. So, I mean, you would look at that right before you tee off, so you know exactly where to hit it on certain hole locations. Or if you're in that hole location, it's better to maybe, you say, a par finish to par five. If it's a certain hole location, it's probably better to get it up by the green, because most of the birdies came from there. Where if you have used historical data, it'll just tell you, show you where they made percentage-wise birdies, not the specific birdies of that day, because the wind could be different, or it could be wet, or it could be dry, or the pin position could be a little bit firmer. So it's a lot of different statistics that you take into consideration for each round. It's very, very complicated, but it works. I mean, it's helped me a lot in situations where we'll be like second guessing something. I'm like, well, this is what the data said. It said long is better than short. So if we're in between clubs, we're always going to go over the longer club. So it helps you make decision more with more authority and preciseness, if you may.
Do a lot of the OEMs provide additional data to players? Is it just Callaway? And who are all the, aside from like consultants, who are all the other data providers out there?
It became quite a big industry. Like, I think I'm pretty sure Callaway has hired a person just for that role. So like most players have now performance coaches, and these performance coaches would be data and analytics. So they will take the data. I mean, another guy comes to mind that I actually just ask. I like to pick people's brains. Is Hunter Stewart. He was a good amateur in his own right. He played a little bit of professional golf, but he works with Maverick McNealy, and he works with quite a few players now on tour as well, just with performance base. So I'll see him many times when I walk the golf course. He'll be with these players on the course, and he'll take a handful of balls and just throw it in a certain position and have the guy from hit a few chips from there, or put it on the green and putt to this pin because it's the 3-putt percentage from that area of the green to this pin is higher. So then the players will practice, and it's just incredible how much that helps without people even thinking about it. Because you see so many times I walk on the golf course and I see these players, they just hit a putt from this side of the green to that side of the green and they walk on. There's no notes being taken in their book, how much it breaks. Because, I mean, all that can help you if you're in the same situation during the tournament. I mean, nobody's going to remember all those. Nobody's brain is that well to remember all of those things.
So is Hunter basically walking with the players during the practice round, just telling them, you need to aim here. You should lay up to this number on this hole. You should be putting from here. Is that kind of what he's doing?
Yeah. So yeah, he'll look at the historical data and then he'll analyze it, and then he'll come to the golf course and practice rounds and be like, most birdies were made from 60 yards out, not from 100 yards out. So hit 60 yards out to this pin position, or most birdies were made from the right side of the green to this short-sided pin. Where if people hit it long left on the green, actually 3-putt percentage is higher than missing the green. So he'll have his players just look at it. Because, I mean, if you save the guy, say, half a stroke on one situation like that, and you do it four times, that's two strokes in a tournament. That can be a difference between winning and losing a tournament. So I know that's, I mean, you don't have half a stroke in golf, but all that adds up because it takes a little bit of pressure off it. Like, for instance, if you have a long, like I said, in that situation, say shorter, you hit yourself short right of a pin, and it's actually a better miss than hitting it on the green, but having a 50-footer from behind the hole, it takes so much pressure off these players, where you actually now need to concentrate on lagging this putt close, where it's actually an easy chip, where you can actually chip it in. So, I mean, I know that's kind of like goes against the traditional sense of approaching a golf course, as green regulations is better than missing the green, but sometimes it's not, especially like around Augusta. I mean, around Augusta, there's situations where you don't aim for the green. You aim to miss it on a certain spot because it's so much easier to chip it from there than putting from 40 foot or 30 foot left of the pin or right of the pin. So it's very, to me, I mean, I really enjoy the stats. I'm very into it. So I feel like it has helped, and that's why you see these guys consistently, the stroke average of the golfers come down by so much, because the golf courses ain't getting easier. Golf courses are way harder, I think, than they used to be. Yes, they're in better condition, but they are way quicker, firmer. So I mean, yeah, just, I think stats are incredible.
As a caddy, how do you deal with like the data saying one thing, but the player might not be comfortable with it, and you have to kind of either talk them into a play or make them confident and what they're doing opposed to what the numbers might say?
I took a long time to warm up to data because with Christian's one of the best players in the world, as we all know. And he is such a different player to data. So with him, it was a little difficult when it came to longer clubs. I mean, we have a very, very clear example of this is he worked with a coach at a certain time that he was very into his data. And he said, you need to go at near field number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, One, two, three, four, five. The bar five around the corner where Bryson hit it over the corner that one time. He hit, I think it's five or six. It's six, actually. He hit it. We were there and we would have 2 iron in every single time because we can't hit driver far enough to get close to the green because it runs into the water. And Bryson actually hit over the water. So we would have 2 iron and he was like, man, you got to go for this green. Data says you got to go for this green. I'm like, I don't agree with you. If I put Christian 80 yards from the pin, he's going to hit it within 5 foot because the green's so small. He's going to hit it within 5 foot every time. He's probably going to make birdie 80% of the time. So we went into the green. I threw a few balls behind the green because the rough is so thick at near field. He hit three of the balls into the water, chipping because it's so severe downslope, thick lie. And then we get to the first round. He's his drive down there and he's got a perfect 3 iron. He's up to like 5 foot to make eagle. I'm like, there goes my theory. Yeah, it is, but it is to answer your question. I didn't really answer your question there, but to answer your question, it is hard because a player's not going to hit a good shot if he doesn't feel comfortable about it. But if you, like as a caddy, you always try to make sure that if you make a mistake, it's in the correct side. So, for instance, in that situation, like it's over water, he doesn't feel comfortable. You're probably going to put something in his hand that goes over the back of the green, not short in the water. So that's the only way you can control, but he's probably not going to hit the shot because these players know themselves. They're probably not going to hit the shot if they don't feel comfortable. They just say, like, I don't feel comfortable. Let's just lay it up. We might five at worst, and we'll be like even with the stroke average of the hole.
When it comes to players working with coaches, you get to be around a lot of the coaches, both performance, mental, physical, and swing. What have you learned from those coaches? Are there any tidbits you can give us?
For me, I won't be where I am if it wasn't for these coaches, because they, I mean, the knowledge they have is incredible. I mean, you have to be like a sponge and absorb it. And each guy that I've dealt with in my career has been so vastly different. I mean, I have coaches that's more field-based or more like performance-based as far as you need to just go play golf. And then you have coaches very tactical, very statistical oriented. And they actually also have so much to add to the party too. Like, for instance, if you have somebody as a field-based coach, you just that's what the previous question is. You like, then you talk to the player about his feel, what you want to feel like, what do you need? Because you're gonna if you feel comfortable, you need a good shot. But then you get the guy that's statistical or the swing is very tactical. Then you learn so much more about by the mechanics of the golf swing and how it works. And if you combine all of that, I mean, it helps you so much as a caddy. It has helped me a lot because there'll be situations where a player, you just don't know where the club is that day in his swing. And he'd be like, okay, well, if you biomechanics do this, then if a club is behind you, you know that you're probably early extending, or there's certain aspects that you would learn about triggers that will happen with that player. And then if you have field base, you need to field maybe over the top to get the club ahead of you or. This so I mean like it's a hard question to answer because if isn't every coach that I've dealt with whether that is physical, mental or swing wise, it's been just bits and pieces that I've learned and it's helped me tremendously in my career.
How do you, as a caddy and also the player, maintain stamina, muscle, all that kind of stuff, and not get too worn down over the course of a season?
For us caddies, it's not. I don't think it's. That's a really a question for a caddy because you just carry the bag. I know there's still physical elements to that. I mean, I do work out and do run and do try to stay fit, but there's caddies that don't. So I mean, it's not that big a question. It's more than nutrition probably for caddies, but I think where caddies do help a lot is with players because these players sometimes play six, seven tournaments in a row. Then it's very vital that the caddy makes sure that the player eats enough on the golf course because that's the only way that the player who could go on such a long stretch of tournaments without getting mentally fatigued or physically fatigued because it's all about what you eat. This and because these players the training has changed so much in the on tour. I mean, you see these guys go after a round, go for hour session in the gym. Then they go sit in the ice bath. So they ice bath for 30 minutes or 5 minutes, whatever, how long you sit in the ice bath. I'm not expert in that. But they take care of their bodies so much. So that's why these guys are so, I mean, they are so good. It's to me, it's just, sometimes I'm just seized to be amazed by the things they do. Sometimes you think, man, you can't hit this shot. and then they pull it off. You're like, whoa, you're better than I thought you were.
What's it like playing in the majors compared to a regular event? And what's is there any difference in obviously the atmosphere, preparation, and also how players respond to that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, majors, I love majors. It's probably it is the funnest tournaments in the world for myself as a caddy, but it's as caddies, we probably don't like the majors that much because it's always expensive week. Everything's expensive. Accommodation's expensive. Getting to the tournament's expensive because there's so many people that's going there. So all the prices goes up. But as far as players, you know, I mean, majors, you know there's one thing that's gonna happen. The player is probably gonna be edgy. He's going to be a bit irritated. He's probably going to be a bit short-tempered because they all just feel the pressure. I mean, obviously a certain pressure that goes with majors, and it always happens. So you got to be really on it. So major weeks is for as far as caddy, you never really switch off. You the whole week you just go 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 go. You have to be on the ball with every decision because if you get it wrong, it's probably going to be the I want to, the reaction of the player will probably be a bit more extreme than it would be than other tournaments, just because of the pressure they are under, and they also they. I mean, the one thing I think that people do at majors, they overprepare, and they burn themselves out, and that's where this. I mean, nutrition is so important. You make sure you eat the right things at the right time, because I mean, it's so easy to want to go. I mean, let's play a couple more holes or. Let's go play 18 holes where you don't need to. I mean, Christian probably had one of the best, I think, approaches to majors. He would play 9, 9, 9. You wouldn't really maybe play 18 at the open because we're gonna play with Ernie or something like that. But they only do it one day. The other 2 days will be 9 holes and 9 holes because you know how important it is for his energy levels to be high. And I think the more you practice, all the bigger expectation you put on yourself. Which is also not a great thing if people start putting too much expectation on a certain tournament, because then you just set up yourself for fail.
So when a player is edgy or is short-tempered or is, has a bad shot and kind of throws a little bit of a fit, is there ever a time that you kind of tell him to, let's say get his shit together, straighten up, or do you just let him be, let him cool off, or does it just depend on the player?
Yeah, it depends obviously on the player, but I mean, if he's really acting out, and it is 100% not the caddy's fault, you would have to say something. But then again, being a caddy and player, it's like a marriage. You have to like be careful what you do when you do certainly, especially in that situation. Like if it's, I think I'm just speaking out of my own personal experiences. If it's my fault, I'll be like, yeah, you're right. I'll take it. I'll be like, I understand. It will get better. But if it's not my fault, I'll probably just keep quiet, and then a couple of not letting another shot be influenced by that attitude. I would talk maybe 10 steps further away from the situation that just happened, and be like, hey, I think it's a little bit unnecessary to waste energy on this, because I don't think that this is the situation. And if he's still mad at us, okay, well, let's just go to the next shot with a clear mind, and we'll talk about it afterwards. Because deep breathing to me is probably the most important part by a player-caddy relationship, is to talk about those situations afterwards and get better at it. As if you take it to your house and then you come back the next day and you're still mad, that doesn't help anyone.
What does a good debrief at the end of the round look like or end of a turn?
Well, I feel this is all, listen, this is all my personal experience or my personal viewpoint on things. I like to do a debrief every tournament. Afterwards, we'll just have a quick chat and be like, hey, what did you like? What didn't you like? What can we get better at? And like, it's basically like we just asked now about if there is those moments that happen and they're angry or whatever. If it's a situation where you can't diffuse it right away, it's best to talk about that right after the round, even though they will be irritated about it. But I've been fortunate enough that all my players have been very nice to me about that, and we'll sit down afterwards, even if it's really, really hard to talk about. But that's the only way you can get better and then not waste another shot on it. Because if you come back the next day thinking about what happened the previous day, you're going to hit bad shots with that mindset.
Do you ever view yourself as like a mental coach out there on the golf course? Because like when you're playing for 5 hours in a big high stress environment, like you're kind of all the player has, or like what does that dance look like for you?
I believe that, I mean, every caddy should be a swing coach, a mental coach, a nutritionist, because, I mean, in essential, you are that guy in that situation. There's no hiding from that. Like if in my opinion, if you let your guy just go haywire and hit bad shot after bad shot without saying anything, you're not worth much. I mean, you should choose a different profession. And I'm probably gonna get scrutiny for that, but that is my opinion, because I feel like what the caddies are doing right now in this whole world is making this profession so professional that we're actually getting treated in according way, where we're actually getting things that, say, for instance, a courtesy car, or we're actually getting treated like normal human beings because we add so much value. I mean, you look at Austin, you look at Ted. I mean, they're great friends of mine. I have the utmost respect for them because they do so much for their players. It's not just being a caddy. I mean, there's definitely a mental side. You have to be able to control your play. No, I can't say control is the wrong word because you don't control your players, but you have to be able to influence his mental state by saying certain things or talking about certain things at a certain time. So, I mean, and that all takes, I mean, all takes like experience, obviously, with the player and his personality, but you also have to invest in yourself, read about how people react to certain situations. Or ask questions about how people would react if that happens, or how other player reacts in that way, and what do you do to help him with that? I mean, I try to always read about or listen to things that can make me a better caddy by influencing his, how can I say, his thought process. I don't not necessarily by me telling him, "Hey, you gotta quit being silly." Just be like, "Hey, what do we think if we do this?" Or, "Hey, this is actually a good, really good shot that, or that's a good spot to leave it, or you can chip it in from there." Or you always got to be, there's got to be an angle about around it instead of going direct. Certain situations you have to go direct, but you always have to be able to speak it into their mind so that they can think it's their decision, not your decision, because then they will 100% get over it way easier.
We're coming up on time here, but I had two more questions. One of them was, as you kind of look forward to what this year, next year, et cetera, look like, how do you see the tour that you're playing on improving? How do you, and what sort of things are you doing as a caddy in order to be able to provide more support to your player as the time rolls on?
So I mean, it is a question that is difficult to answer because the foreseeable future is obviously a bit up in the air because we have to go to the Live Q school and all that. But for you know, if all things go according to plan next year, well, even now, I mean, Brandon and I, we've been working on getting certain things dialed. Like we're getting a practice routine, more structure in his practice. For instance, having a wedge combine that he needs to do every week, make sure he meets certain standard, because we know if we're in trouble, we just hit it to a certain number, he's gonna up and down it every single time because that's what you work for. So yeah, that's we, in the off season, that's all we do. We work on getting better at those things and having our structure in place that the weeks that the coaches aren't there, that we know what we're doing. We don't need to ask questions or guess what's going on, or we do our thing and we just keep going forward, because the worst thing you want to do if your coach is not there, if you start panicking and you don't know what you're going on, because then you don't have the structure there to fall back to. You know, if you do this, these things correct, you'll be fine. So that's just building up to next season. That's what we're doing. I'm leaving Saturday for a 3 week stretch where we're trying to just do as best as we can, because we're going to try to climb up that world rankings, because the next two tournaments will be world ranking tournaments. Trying to get back into majors, although these guys still care so much about golf. Even though people think the Live guys don't care, they care a lot. They work so hard because they want to play in the majors. They want to be able to show the world they're still great players.
Excellent. And then last question we ask every player and every caddy and every guest is the same, which is, and for you, it'll be a two-parter because you play golf. If you go back to yourself as a junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that one thing be? And the second part of that being, if you could tell a junior golfer just one thing, what would that one thing be?
For myself, I would have probably studied harder because I know what it was like and I know my ability. I probably wouldn't have played other sports because I did get hurt as a youngster with my shoulder in rugby. That hurt my golf career, but I still don't think I had the talent that these guys had. But as a junior golfer, get good from 100 yards in because you can score from 100 yards in. If you're good at that, you can score on any golf course. Because most, I mean, that is where all the people make their money according to statistics.
Perfect. Where can people find you on social media, follow you as you guys go through these events and go through Live Q School?
I'm not big on social media, but I do have Instagram. I think it's Johan Swanepoel Zero. Yeah, that's about it. But we need to get better at that. Yeah, actually, that's a really good point there. So we'll try to get better at it and keep everybody in the loop and show them how the Stingers are doing business next year.
That sounds great. If you're listening to us right now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts or YouTube, please like, subscribe, leave a rating. And if you're trying to find us on social media, you can find us on Instagram at The Tournament Code and on X at Tournament Code. As always, we appreciate you joining us and look forward to diving in deeper to what it takes to play elite tournament golf.